right. Well, hello and welcome, everyone. And I'm really hoping for some call-ins today. But we're bringing you, I'll call it the first official episode of Lunchtime with Tom. And this is what old people do. We do stuff over the lunch hour. So to hopefully make this so it's just not me talking to myself like last time, I have a extra special appreciated co-host today, and that's Dinesh.
Hello, how's it going, guys?
Yeah, so Dinesh, I kind of will just say, again, I'm Tom, going to be the host here. I used to podcast literally years ago, trying to get back into it. But Dinesh, we've actually known each other from before. Do you want to give a quick blurb of kind of maybe sort of kind of where you came from in magic and kind of where life has you now?
Sure. So it's probably almost 10 years ago. You're doing Monday Night Magic, and I started my own podcast with some people I played with while I was in college. It was called Intern Podcast. It's explicit if you want to check it out, but, you know, mind your ears. And then college got in the way, so the podcast sort of fell out. Now I've joined Tom into the MTG Dad realm.
Mm-hmm.
Where I definitely don't get to play nearly as much as I like, so I just end up watching YouTube videos or just reading content and experiencing the game through everybody else.
Which it is a very different flavor to following Magic than, I'm assuming you were kind of like me before kids and everything. Like I followed maybe like at this point it would have been the standard scene pretty closely, you know, decks. Now it's kind of whatever random people I am either following, say like on Twitter or have seen on YouTube, or occasionally now that I feel like Magic is getting more mainstream, like occasionally a story breaks into mainstream news, and I still find that fascinating. No,
yeah,
Dinesh,
my,
do you do? Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, do you do much?
My favorite thing to do is when I'm just trying to, like, you know, randomly build a deck, because right now Magic is more of a Lego experience where I just sort of build something and I never really get to play with it, but look at it and it's kind of a cool experience, is just seeing like how expensive some cards are, and I don't get why certain cards are like absurdly expensive.
Well, yes, the most recent one for me, and this is almost, I was planning to do like a brief segment every week about this week's weird expensive card, is, I'm going to quiz you, is Goblin Lore.
Oh, it's absurd. Absolutely, yeah. Absurd. It's like $40.
Yeah, so just for me, I had to go pull this one up on, I'm sorry, Wizard of the Coast. Gatherer is pretty good, but Scryfall is amazing if you are trying to look up cards. I don't know if you have a preferred, card database, but Scryfall.com is amazing.
I haven't used Scryfall. I just have accepted the terrible tool that is Gatherer and have learned how to use it to find everything. So
you, okay,
it
so
takes
you,
a
just
lot
use,
more clicks
you just swallowed the blue pill and just went with it.
Yeah.
So let me share, because again, I did not know what Goblin Lore is, and this is currently a four of an, I guess people have kind of stayed sort of one of the top tier, we're talking like top 2-3 modern decks right now, is Goblin Lore. It's a red in the colorless sorcery. It has currently only been printed in 10th edition, Starter 1999 edition, and Portal Second Age. It's an uncommon. It's a sorcery. It says draw four cards, then discard three cards at random. So this one came on my radar as people were asking me, like, does anybody have any Goblin Lords? Especially if people were looking for trying to get foil options. I was like, I have no clue what this card is, but it did make me go pull out my 10th edition box. So I used to buy four of every common and uncommon, and this is where it starts to pay me off now, like 10 years down the road.
Yeah, I was looking through my stuff to try to find them, because every now and then, you know, I'll just see it on Twitter where somebody's complaining about a spike, and I'll just see if I happen to have that random card. And the only Goblin Lores I have Incinerate written on the front.
Nice.
At some point during college when we were like playtesting, wanted to put a deck together to play against something else, it just had one in a red, so it became our Incinerates.
It's your worst, it's your sorcery speed Incinerate?
Yeah, well, no, it was just, I guess, just had one in a red, and that's all that we looked for in the corner, and just
okay.
What the card was on the front, and, you know, we would just use a bunch of commons to proxy up a, you know, whatever deck, so we could, like, you know, play through the gauntlet.
Now, as we talk about kind of weird card prices, Dinesh, when did you kind of first start getting into Magic? Like, what were the sets at that time?
I first learned how to play during the Urza's era. My brother used to play competitively. I was really young, and he just taught me how to play, so that way, like, he would hand me an aggro deck, and I would just play the things and turn them sideways, and he would try to, you know, play this that way, because, you know, he didn't have too many people who played with him then. But playing on my own, I didn't play until Time Spiral.
Okay, so that's kind of your time.
Mm-hmm.
But that's still early enough where now even there's a lot of, you know, key cards now and kind of, especially modern, that are just, the prices are crazy. And for me, the one when I was still, and as you kind of mentioned when we were talking before, that Commander has become a great format for, I'll say, older Magic players, is you can use your collection that may not have fours of, and you can still make some fun decks. For me, the first one that I discovered, I was just like, how is this card like $50, was Doubling Season.
Oh my god!
Like, yeah, I love Kokens and various things. I'm like, oh, let's go get another Doubling Season, because it was just a, you know, random, basically junk rare from Ravnica. And I was just like, I'm looking right now, and now it is roughly about $55. And to me, that's just, it's still insanity.
Yeah, and they keep reprinting it. I mean, not keep, but they reprinted it a few times, and it's still, it's quite expensive. There was one that popped up on Twitter today that I have one that's beat up. I'm going to see if I have some more. It's Helm of Obedience.
Oh, I have a bunch of those. What is
yeah,
that one?
So it's $100.
What? What?
It just, like, spiked, because I have this in, like, a Chaos deck where you're not trying to, you know, you're trying to use the card, like, as printed and just, you know, just fun. But
yeah, that's an old Alliance, as I remember. I just remember the art looked kind of cool.
Yeah.
So for people who might be scratching their heads about what in the world Helm of Obedience is, four colorless artifacts. This is from way back in Alliances. What, and of course, at this point, I have no idea what your rarity was. It's a rare. Says X colorless mana and tap. Target opponent puts cards from the top of their library into their graveyard until a creature card or X cards are put into the graveyard this way, whichever comes first. If a creature card is put into the graveyard this way, sacrifice Helm of Obedience and put that card onto the battlefield under your control. X cannot be zero. Do you know what deck or why this is spiking right now?
I think it's on the reserved list, and there's a deck in Legacy that plays this. But if you have something that makes it where cards can't go to your graveyard, right, it keeps flipping their deck until they have no deck.
Oh, so I'm trying to think, like,
so you just kill them with it? So, like, if you have, like, Leyline of the Void or Rest in Peace in play?
Or Rest in Peace. Okay, that's the one I'm thinking of. Okay.
Then they just die.
Nice. It's like an even worse Grindstone combo than with Painter's Servant.
Oh, yeah, and I didn't even realize that card was banned in Commander. And apparently it's
banned
in
there's a handful of ones there that... Commander is an interesting, I don't know, from like your local play group, where there's definitely the range that people are really, this is where I was just making, I guess, fun decks, not necessarily highly competitive, but if you get down to the nuts and bolts, you can make some just obscenely busted Commander decks out there. You know, combo heavy, it's not super fun.
There's definitely, like, in the Houston area, there's seems to be just two sort of suits. But there, people, like, when you sit down and ask, they ask, like, you know, what kind of Commander game you want to play. So that's kind of nice, because, I mean, I have, like, a hyper-competitive deck, if that's what people want. But I just usually, like, you know, I sort of sit around and drink a couple beers sort of format, where you're just trying to do crazy things that are fun and wacky.
So do you have a personal favorite Commander right now, though?
I'm trying to make this... The Commander is just really for the colors, but it's Yasova. Dragon Claw?
Yasova Dragon. That's one I have not heard of for a while. It's
It's mainly because, like, I have a friend that we sort of do, like, an Iron Chef sort of thing with Commander decks, where we're given cards and have to build decks out of them. So I was given Perplexing Chimera and Warp Whirl. So Perplexing Chimera is a 5-mana 3/3 enchantment creature from Theros block. And whenever an opponent casts a spell, you can give them Perplexing Chimera. And if you do, you gain control of the spell, and you can choose new targets.
Okay.
So, like, I mean, the whole reason I chose Sova is so you can try to keep stealing the Chimera back. But it's a Warp World deck, but I'm trying to give everybody as many permanents as possible. So I'm playing, like, the Hunted Creatures from Ravnica that give them tokens, right? And then there's
okay.
a Doubling Season that counts for everybody. I think it costs like 1 more mana or something. And it's a Doubling Season, but for all players. So you give them like a bunch of tokens, a bunch of lands, and then you cast Warp World. And they get most of their deck in play, and you have a Ketterek Leviathan, which bounces all the non-land permanents. And when it comes into play, it's like a 5/5 for 8.
Yep, yeah, 2 blue and 6.
And then there's a merfolk called Whirlpool Warrior.
That's when you shuffle cards from your hand into your library and then you draw that many again.
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was discard. Okay, this deck does not work. The one I have is in a foreign language and I totally... All right, so we're going to scrap this deck.
Well, those are the same way you got to go. Yeah, spitball,
yeah. You discard the cards from your hand and you draw that many, and I thought I was trying to deck them. Deck does not work.
But that's part of fun. That's part of Commander. You don't figure that out until you're going, or you just try to kind of bluff everybody.
Yeah, there we go. But, I mean, the couple times I played it, it's just been a pretty fun, like, sort of group hug deck. And everyone has just killed everybody, so I haven't gotten to live the dream, but apparently the dream is fake.
there's no cake, yeah, at the end of that one. So I'm curious, now, for you, Dinesh, are you interested in, like, promos? Is that something, like you, do you try to foil out your commander decks? Do you try to get interesting promos? Like, where are you at today?
I used to be that way. Like, I had a cube, and it, you know, majority of the cards, if they were available in foil, they were foiled out. Now, like, if there's something cool, and, you know, I see it in a trade binder, I'll trade for it. It's got a really, I just don't get out enough for, like, you know, to do any trading or anything, but I appreciate them.
Yeah, so I was just kind of curious as if you were around, it was, I called them the very classic kind of judge lands, or was it APAC lands? The ones that you got for, like, you know, like a judging assistant, they were ridiculously expensive.
The APAC ones were, like, in booster boxes in Europe and Asia. Then they
really? Is that what I never was sure where they came from.
Yeah, they came in, like, a little, like, a small booster pack that had, you know, like, 5 lands in it. And it's, I think it was maybe Invasion or something, that, like, a buy a box promo in Europe and the APAC region. And so, like, if you bought a box, you got a little pack of those. But the Guru ones are the ones that, you know, if you helped, they give you those. And those are the ones that
those
are, like,
the ones I'm thinking.
$100. Yeah. And they have the really nice, like, I think it's Rebecca Guay art.
Yeah. So, you know, personally, I've always liked promo basic lands. Is that's something you can actually use in a lot of different decks, as opposed to the kind of the random, I guess, you know, various promos that come out depending on the sets or what, you know, kind of what sets are out, what formats are popular. Because they actually are doing another round of promo. Now they're nice and foily basic lands. And these are going to be at the kind of Grand Prix starting with Vegas.
So you sent me a link. And I wanted to look at it live.
So. Yeah, so this is the arts by Donato Giancola, and I will pull up some of the other cards done by that artist. I think it's kind of a newer one. I say newer, but kind of a more recent artist. Yeah, the art looks great. I was kind of curious what you thought of the text box on this one. Cause it's,
oh,
again,
wow.
I've,
they did away with a mana symbol.
And no mana symbol, and just a big old Grand Prix on it, which kind of interesting.
I mean, I guess it's cool, like, in the sense that, you know, it hadn't been done. Like, I don't know if you remember those, they had those JSS promos and the Japanese ones that had, like, I call it, like, sort of like the Yu-Gi-Oh! Foiling, where it was sort of like a Starburst-looking thing.
Yeah, where there's, like, a, not a texture band, there's, like, a, almost like a symbol
yeah.
inside the foiling that you could see. Yeah, so Donato has done a huge amount of art. I'm trying to think of ones that might be the most popular. Juju Bubble, I actually remember. That's a good one. Intruder Alarm, the original. Grinning Totem. Ooh, Gerard's Wisdom. Oh, I still remember using that card. We have Cro-Mat, the original Cro-Mat. Cro-Mox is Donato. So some pretty classic pieces of art there.
Let's see.
Yeah.
There's have you heard of that format, Vintage Artist Construction? Constructed?
I have not.
Okay, hold on.
I'm guessing what the theme is, but fill me in.
So it is a constructed format where you can only use a certain artist for all of your cards. And
including lands?
Including basic lands. So
okay.
Some of the restrictions are certain artists have only done, you know, one or two types. So this guy now has all of them.
Basic lands, and also now actually an array of actual cards and spells.
Mm-hmm. So there's, he's got Chrome Mox and Coalition Relic. And these are
Kindle? Oh, killed with the original Kindle.
Because I think I've wanted to, like, play the deck, but then, like, some of the random lands started spiking, and you have to have the exact version. Right, to that they had to put in there, so we can get pricey, but there's like a red white deck that's really, really good. That has like an Inferno Titans, Wrath of God.
Yeah, so there you go. Denial will now be a powerhouse. And was it the
vintage artist construction.
Okay.
Oh, he's got Memory Jar too. Mm.
Yeah, I say if there's not a banned list in that. There you go. He is the winner with having Memory Jar.
That seems sweet.
Now, Deshna, do you play much like online? Are you much into MTGO or done any, been a part of the beta for MTG Arena?
I was part of the closed beta for Arena. I did that a little bit, and I'll get on MTGO to play Cube when it's available, and then I have a couple Popper decks and a couple EDH decks.
Yeah, and the prices for Popper online too have gotten kind of nuts for some of the popular archetypes. So I was curious. Now, are you much for, like, do you do much other like online gaming, like? I'm gonna throw a couple of like Overwatch or Hearthstone, any of the other.
Yeah, I play a lot of Overwatch.
Yeah, have you been following all the? And I'm curious how this is gonna impact Wizards. Is that now we have multiple EU countries are starting to ban loot boxes, and how they define these as being kind of gambling.
Mm-hmm.
So Overwatch, unfortunately, is one that's getting. I mean, it's not the only one, but it's probably one of the bigger, most popular ones that's going to get hit. And you can blame EA for pretty much all this. It is clearly EA's fault after Star Wars Battlefront 2. But when I actually started reading how, like, so far it's Belgium and the Netherlands, how they define loot boxes. And to me, I cannot tell that there'd be any difference versus buying a digital pack of Magic cards. So
now,
I was curious.
Would they, if you could only buy ticks, and then you could only buy packs with ticks, would that be different?
Yeah, and that's why I wasn't sure. I was kind of curious where, you know, MTG Arena, I guess I don't know what the, I think there's enough information out there. I'm not going to talk about specifics. But one of the ways that they are kind of differentiating themselves, you can still buy, you know, packs with, I guess, in-game currency that you can buy with real money. But they also have their wild cards. And so instead of saying Hearthstone where you can break down your unneeded cards into, I think there's a dust.
Mm-hmm.
in Arena, you literally get these wild cards, so you can trade in for any specific either common, uncommon, you know, rare, or mythic. And I was wondering if this was actually just planned on its own independently, or if it was actually informed by these current enacting regulations that are starting at least two countries. And I would, the UK has come on and said they don't think loot boxes are gambling. They have their own, we'll say, political problems right now. But I'm guessing potentially a number of other EU countries are going to follow suit.
I was reading a little bit more into this. If the in-game goods don't have a market value, they don't violate the law. This is at least for the Netherlands. So, like, the Overwatch one, since it's all cosmetic and doesn't change anything and you can't, you know, give your cosmetic items to somebody else, and there's no, like, third-party market for them, that they don't violate it. But, like, things like in where, you know, you would open up a loot box to get, like, gear that affects how your player goes, and people can sell, you know, the account with that gear because there's a functional change, apparently violates it.
Yeah, and this is where it's confusing, because Belgium and the Netherlands they're using a different definition, and this is where I potentially would feel really, I think it's going to be terrifying for, you know, a lot of developers about how do you navigate the different legalities among all these separate countries, because Belgium is using a little bit of a different definition where basically if it has any sort of like randomized component that you can then buy with real money, doesn't necessarily have to be tradable outside of that ecosystem. Those are not allowed. So they're like Overwatch, CSGO, and a bunch of other ones are a no-go. I guess for me, I guess for MTGO, I mean, technically, you know, there's not an external way of, you know, selling these cards. Obviously, the you know, tickets, event tickets have been kind of used as the, you know, basically the prison currency for MTGO. I'm just not sure what's going to happen for
websites that, like, they function like a card store where you can just tell them, you know, you can click all the digital cards you want and pay real money. And then they have like a bot that gives it to you in the client.
Okay. So there you actually are spent. You're using, I guess it's being done through the system, but you're using money outside of the system. Interesting.
That's how I built my EDH decks, because it was just a lot easier that way than trying to navigate, you know, fractions of a tick with a bunch of different bots to trade what you're trying to do. This just does it all on their side, and then it just, you pay however much it costs, and then they send you a message, and then you get on your account, and then they just give you all the stuff.
So I guess I would, even though obviously MTGO people have been sort of having some concerns with, as MTG Arena kind of figures itself out how it's going to fit in, MTGO is not, as far as we know, is not going away, but it seems like potentially your ability to play MTGO in Europe might drastically change. And it seems like that could be very challenging for Wizards right now.
I can see that.
For MTG Arena, we don't know exactly if there's going to be ways for, just as you mentioned, there are ways for people to buy cards with real money outside. I guess kind of parallel to the MTGO economy. I'm assuming that similar things will happen with Arena. I'm not sure if they're going to be allowing direct card trading. Mm-hmm. If they don't, that would eliminate that. And I know that's something that they are still figuring out in the beta. And did you read at all about their kind of curious little test run in New Zealand with the booster codes and codes in the booster packs?
I mean, that is something that, so Pokemon does something similar to this, and it's very popular. And the Pokemon Online client, it's, so these codes, you know, you can just use like your webcam to like scan the QR code that's in the booster pack, and then you just get a digital booster pack. It's not like the same contents, but then those digital booster packs become the prison currency for that system of trading to get the actual cards that you want. But you can buy just the codes that are unused from reputable like card stores for like $1. And so a pack usually equates to $1 online. And so that way, like, I played the Pokemon card game digitally because I worked at a card shop during college, and a lot of the people, when they would open their packs, would just give me the code. So I thought it was pretty cool.
And for Pokemon, was it? I mean, did that code give you the exact cards that were in that specific pack, or did it just give you like a certain amount of like, I guess, points or credits? How did they? What did the code actually give you?
So if it were in Magic, like if the equivalent, if you bought a Dominaria booster pack and had one, that code would give you a Dominaria booster pack online.
It wasn't necessarily the same cards. It was like an unopened booster.
Correct.
Oh, interesting. Okay. And I guess in a little ways, that's kind of, they said it was very early, but that's sort of similar to what they were doing with their codes, where 10% of the time you would get a Dominaria booster, and 9% of the time you'd get some Ingold, their currency inside the system, and then 1 of 5 random commons.
And would the gold be enough to buy a pack?
At the way, in the current economy, the answer is no. Right now, obviously there's always these things saying that it's going to change. Right now, it's roughly 1,000 gold to buy a booster. And with, at least in their test run for New Zealand, it's 100 gold that you get in that 90% chance time. And they're currently limiting that you can only turn in 10 of these codes per account as their sort of, I guess, soft launch of these codes.
And it's only in a very small market.
Yes, yeah. So just, again, you know, New Zealand, you know, is a hotbed of soft launching pretty much everything, I guess, now from mobile games to actual physical card game tests. I'm pretty sure that's where they're going to test, like, new McDonald's French fries and, like, Burger King flavors now. Because this is where I grew up. It was, again, kind of more northern Minnesota. For some reason, there's various theories that it was a very common testing area for new fast food items. I didn't realize this until I lived other places. Like our local McDonald's for a period of time would have been the mid-90s, had free refills on everything. If you bought a large French fry, you got as many French fries as you wanted. Chicken nuggets, free refills.
That's awesome.
It lasted roughly 2 weeks, because you just can imagine the rampant abuse of a table about 8 teenagers getting, it had to be a certain size. I think you had to buy like a 10 or 20 piece nugget, but they bought once. They all had a soda, but you got one thing of French fries, one thing of nuggets, and then they sat there for about 2 hours. It's where they test run I'm a purveyor of fast food, probably led to some health problems I've had in the past, but still love fast food. It's also where they did a test run of the new Burger King, basically French fry recipe was in this area of Minnesota. They also tested a number of desserts for Burger King. It's a long history, very interesting. But I like seeing them
Fun
try out
fact
these. Go ahead.
About Burger King testing. So my dad, for a large portion of his life, ran a franchise of Burger King here in Houston. He would go to, like, they have these conferences in Las Vegas, right? And then they have actual chefs that are preparing the recipes for all these new items. And so, you know, we would get to try, like, the new things before they would go out. Or he would come back from Vegas and tell me, this thing's going to come out. Whatever you do, do not touch it because it's extremely, extremely unhealthy.
I'm just curious, do you remember any specific items that maybe did go out like in wide testing that you tried that were either good or just unbelievably awful?
So they had this idea of making Burger Kings that could serve like alcohol.
Right? Yeah, that sounds like a recipe for disaster, but tell me more.
So the idea was it's supposed to be like a high class looking Burger King, right? And it had beers on tap and you could sit down and enjoy a nice meal. But they had like this, it was a thick cut bacon and it's supposed to be a whiskey based barbecue sauce on the Whopper. And I just remember that sauce tasting horrid.
Wow. I'm just trying to envision, like in my mind, I'm thinking, I don't know, is Chipotle's, is that a nationwide franchise? Do they have Chipotle's in Texas?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe I was thinking that, but that's not, you know, they just have bottled beer. They don't have, you know, draft beer is a whole different, like, level.
Do they have James Coney Island up there?
No, they don't. What kind of restaurant is that?
So it is a hot dog chain.
Oh, okay.
And
now we have A&W.
Sort of
that's about the best we have.
into other things, but recently they've rebranded themselves, and I was craving like a chili dog a few months ago, and so I was like, oh, I'll go to James Coney Island. Haven't been there in years, and yeah, they had beers on draft, and you could get like glasses of wine. It was pretty crazy from a hot dog joint.
Yes, and for, I'm assuming you're probably in the same boat where, as you have kids and when they're at younger ages, they only eat, you know, a few different things. You know, somehow their body survives, even though it's consisted entirely of a matrix of like chicken nuggets and mac and cheese sticking it all together. Is,
Yep, chicken nuggets, mac and cheese, French fries, and milk.
yep, it's pretty amazing that, you know, what the human body actually can. It's like, you know, like where are all these nutrients that I, you know, I need? Like, I don't see my kids eating dirt outside or, you know, like, you know, eating starch and stuff that you see people do with that pica. But yeah, like now we have, there's a, I'm pretty sure it's nationwide, but it's called Noodles and Company. And they have an amazing mac and cheese there. And we go there at least once a week.
I've only been to there once, and I don't know. My food is kind of bland, what I got, and it didn't seem worth the price point.
Oh no, it's, I would say in general it's not, but they have cornered of the market on the kids see. It's like the world's, I guess the mac and cheese, it's, yeah, it's not, it's bland. That's a good, it is a good way to describe it. But it's very gooey and it comes on a neat little plastic tray. So that is, we've won at that point.
I gotcha. Yeah, I guess if we go out for mac and cheese, Panera, and I mean, I guess that's absurdly expensive, but.
No, Dinesh, for your kids, we'll kind of, we're at about the half mark, we'll start to wrap it up. But you know, our kids are in the similar age ranges. Now, have they shown any interest in magic cards, like looking at the art or, you know, like seeing you play or anything else yet?
Yeah, my daughter, who's three, you know, I don't play as much anymore, but you know, I'll just sit and like build, and so I have a bunch of cards and stuff laid out. So she will sneak off into the room where all the cards are housed, and the door's locked, but it's, you know, one of those like house doors where you can take like a screwdriver or something flat and unlock it and like,
Okay,
you know,
yes.
get in. So she's figured out how to unlock those, and she'll go in and she goes to like a box that has some commons, and she'll grab them. And then, you know, I'm playing a game or something. I look over and it's like, hey, what do you have in your hand? And then she just scuttles off to her room, and I have to hope that she hasn't grabbed anything expensive. But she tends to gravitate towards the green cards. I don't know if it's just she likes the color green a lot.
So it's the exact same thing with my kids. Green, like forest, like basic forests. Those are what, that's number one. That's what they go for.
Yeah, when she was like a year old, maybe a little younger, she was still she was teething, and this was back when like Puka Trade was a thing, and I was, you know, acquiring cards that way. She had chewed through a Fraelise, the green Planeswalker commander that was in
Okay, yeah.
a top loader and a sleeve. It was in a box.
That took time and effort at that point.
I know. I wasn't even mad. I was just impressed.
He's like, yeah, eat a whole wheel of cheese. You can, yeah, eat, literally eat a plastic magic card. Just like, that's actually impressive. I'm waiting to see your diaper in about 2 hours when that comes out.
Oh, that. And so they're still in the stage where they love crayons. So they just like eat the crayons. Like they'll color. And then you turn your head. And as soon as you turn your head, it's just crayon into mouth.
Yep,
And
there's
they
like,
can
oh
do it
wait, this
quickly.
looks colorful on the paper. I bet it's going to taste really good inside my mouth.
And
Yeah,
it
the
stays the same color all the way through.
yes, it does. Yeah, originally it's like a kind of like instead of Joseph's Technicolor Dreamcoat, it's like a Technicolor, basically, you know, diaper going up their back. You're just like, oh, this is, it's wrong to see like blue. You're just like, that's just, that's not a like a biological color for people. And I started getting into trouble as your kids get a little bit older. I started to, we got our first Power Wheels, you know, like the little, you know, power wheels, like little, and I used to do like electrical engineering stuff. So I have started modifying our Power Wheels to see how, basically, because I, it was too slow. Because it comes with like this 12 volt, like 600 pound lead acid car battery that takes forever to charge. You could maybe get like a mile or two out of it. I was like, this is not good. So I rewired it so it can run off like a lithium polymer pack from like RC cars at like about 20 volts. and there's another way to like make it go into a higher, some of them have like a default, like a higher gear that you have to manually enable.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, well, I'll do both and we'll see what happens. So one of our neighbors has a 4-year-old and poor little Henry decided he was the first one to try the car since I did this. He did a roughly 20-foot wheelie. Like,
oh, wow.
And you can't, having never been in a car doing wheelie, you can't steer a car if the front wheels aren't on the ground.
Yeah.
So it was like a land rocket. It was fairly fascinating. Luckily, we're good friends with the parents. So we agreed that we should go down to the lower speed level. And then Henry was okay.
Oh, that's great.
And then I went online. So I was curious. Like everything else in the world, there is an online community for whatever random combination of things you want to do. So it's like, of course, there's a huge online community for Power Wheels modding. There is whole groups out there requiring to like run off of like car batteries, like 48, 40 some volts.
Oh, wow.
That is something impressive to see. Where the car like pretty much flips itself over. Obviously, there's not like a kid in it. And then there's also people take Power Wheels and modify them to be driven by adults, like still the same size. Yeah,
cool.
It's everything. Yes, it was. Is it rule? Is it rule 34? What's the rule where?
Yeah, but
happens. It's for porn, but in my mind, this is like electronic car porn that you're taking this. Because every kid growing up, like I can still remember the Bigfoot Power Wheels ad from when I was probably like 8 years old on TV. And also, you're an adult, you have $200. Like, I was deprived. I never had a Power Wheels. We will have a Power Wheels in our life. And then you're like, this thing is way too slow. And then you have to go all the way up.
This guy has modified one of the Jeep ones to have a like a minigun mounted on the back that fires Nerf.
Sweet. Bullets. Like where you like turn the gun around like a
GI
Joe style.
Yeah, and so there's like a platform in the back where you know the kid can stand on and
that's one of the best things about having kids is you get to re-explore the toys and if we're of similar ages, you probably notice like just the cycle of toys coming back. A lot of the toys from my childhood now are that is what's being revamped again for kids. It's like, you know, DuckTales is back, My Little Pony.
Oh my God.
Is back. I mean, everything. I was just like Popples? I'm like, I remember Popples from when I was a kid. There it is. It's back. Madballs?
I have seen.
Do you remember Madballs?
Every
Balls?
Episode of My Little Pony, the rework.
And it's actually kind of good. I mean, I know there's like bronies, that whole thing, but the cartoon itself is not bad. Like, I don't mind
there's
it.
There's character development, and it makes sense that they would do those things. And
so I went back and I think it was Netflix, so they have some of the original My Little Pony cartoons, and it's like, oh, these were awful. Just awful, awful. But yeah, I saw Madballs at Target the other day. This is a toy. I don't know if they were popular, but it was like, they're like small. They're about the size of a base or softball. I'd say probably closer to a softball, and they had like faces. Like one looked like a mummy. One looked like a skeleton.
Yeah.
And you just like, I don't know what you did with them. You just throw them around at each other, I guess, but those are back now.
Oh, you know, they need to bring back, what was that? Crossfire, the game where you shot marbles at people for 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Stuck in the... Can you sing the song? I still remember the song.
Crossfire!
Are you stuck in the crossfire? And then it gives them the 80s. Crossfire! It is an amazing... I think I found it on YouTube. It is an amazing TV ad. With a jingle catching up to remember like 20 years later. And Dangerous was like the Steely Marbles. I'm like...
Yeah, they were like
at some point every game came out, you just threw them at each other. You know, like steel bullets at each other. And I was like, well, this is still kind of fun.
Let's see if they made a revert. Oh, it looks like you can still get it for $24.
Yeah, and then if we're still on memory lane, the Domino Rally is back. They have reinvented Domino Rally, which was I was very fond of. It was like the little tiny Pez-sized plastic dominoes.
Yes. Okay. I remember
and you could buy the little like train that would like poop them out.
Kid.
Yeah, it's like everybody you wanted the truck that pooped them out on a line. Nobody ever had one, but that's what you wanted.
Yeah, I was a Kinects kid. That was the thing I was obsessed with as a kid.
Oh, were those? Was it like a hexagon base? I'm trying to remember what the base shape was.
I don't know. Maybe the actual circle of it was. Octagonal.
Okay.
But there were just, you know, rods and things that the rods would connect to and had a bunch of different angles. And so you could build like structures and and vehicles, and they had like actual mechanics and mechanisms. Like you could build like roller coasters and all these different things with it, because it was just I never had Legos. I had these because I guess they were cheaper than Legos as a kid.
Well,
so that's why.
And I kind of liked I pulled up the Kinects, and they remind me a lot more of the old like Erector set sort of style building. Where you could build much more, you know, it wasn't quite as heavy because it wasn't all solid bricks.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. I had a different one that I would say looked somewhat like this, but I guess the base units was like, it looked like a round, almost like a Christmas ornament ball, and it had six connection points, like one on each four sides and top and bottom. Oh God, it's killing me with the name. It was basically the GoBots to this. It was like, you know, the crappy knockoff one. Oh, that's gonna kill me till I remember what it is. Yeah, but yeah, toys are fun. So yeah, it's get back into it, especially with your kids. Like they're starting to get into like, I call them like sort of the fun science toys. You're just like, yeah, we're gonna go get the magnetiles and all the other stuff.
Oh yeah, so we, it's totally for them as soon as they fall asleep.
Yeah, and then man, my dad for Christmas got the, it's basically these, it's a set of like screws and things made to stick cardboard together.
Mm.
And you can build some pretty amazing, it's basically, it's like Labo.
That,
but
that thing looks so cool, and I think I'm going to have to buy a Switch for the kids, so that way the kids can play with the Labo.
Yep, yeah, because they're going to love that piano while you wear the backpack and pretend to be a robot.
Absolutely.
Because that is what every adult wants. It's like, I want to be the punching, crazy looking schizophrenic guy with the Labo backpack on, stomping around. Well, Dinesh, we've got a couple minutes left, so I want to wrap it up. Thank you for joining me. It was great fun to talk a little bit about magic and then a whole lot about 1980s toys. Oh, as I sign off, because you seem to have similar tastes, what is your recollection of Fireball Island?
Oh,
do you remember the board game Fireball Island?
It was like, had so many components and a really detailed board, right? And it was really colorful.
Yes, it was. I guess I shouldn't use the word board game. It was like a molded plastic. It was like three-dimensional. It had red marbles that were the fireballs. And you like, it was kind of like the Game of Life where you like follow the trail and you could get hit by the... And you had to get the red ruby, and you get like these little hexagons that would save you if you got hit by a fireball. That is coming back. It's like one of the most highly funded Kickstarters ever for a board game.
Oh, sweet.
So they have rebooted Firewild. And it's interesting on their Kickstarter page. They go through kind of how they remade this game for, I'll say, today. Because the old Fireball Island is, as a kid, it was awesome. It's boring because it's the exact same game every single time. But this one, they use like these palm trees that rotate on the board and have like a, they have an arrow base and that can change the direction that the fireballs go. It's pretty impressive.
Cool.
So again, just adding in that, you know, the 80s are back in, you know, 2018, and it feels good. So join us hopefully every week. And by me, if Dinesh is willing, he will always be welcome to come back. Again, this is Lunchtime with Tom and probably other people. You can follow me on Twitter at PSG Reader. Dinesh, if you would like, you don't have to, but if you wanted to share your Twitter handle, we definitely can put it out there.
It's MTG Dinesh. That's MTG DanEsh.
Yeah, and as I put it in my kind of first test episode, I'm doing this until I can get sponsored by Johnson & Johnson, and my goal is to get free baby wipes. Because Johnson & Johnson makes everything, is what I've discovered. And also, when the baby wipes tell you that they're flushable, that is a lie.
Yes, they do have flushable wipes that are like the cheap knockoff ones that disintegrate while you use them. So I think they're safe in the toilet.
Oh, okay. So yeah, you're just throwing like the poo shards in there, kind of, and it's gonna be safe to flush.
Because they're just of terrible quality to begin with. So like as you wipe, you're actually just using your hand. It just wets it for you.
Oh, that's disturbing. You're bringing back memories. No more. Oh, man. Horrible memories. All right. Let's see. Can we keep talking once it's done?
Sure.
Oh, yeah. So, okay. I didn't know if it was going to cut us off. I also wasn't sure. It is done, but it's still letting me talk. Yeah, well, thanks for joining. Yeah, it's been so long since I podcasted. I've done little bursts, but I just kind of missed doing it. But you're probably like me. I can't stay up till midnight to do a podcast. It does not work.
Yeah, my wife actually used to listen to your DG Potpourri.
Yeah, it was fun. With Conley and Adam, but they it goes like they like to record like 10:30 p.m. and it's like I'm not even awake. And I have to get up at like 5 to go to clinic. I'm like, this is right. Killing me, guys. But no, it was, again, I like podcasting. You know, if she listened to that show, my favorite part was literally not the magic part. I would talk a little bit about magic, but it was more everything else around life. But
yeah, that's what. And then we were driving across the country once, so I had a bunch of podcasts queued up. So she's just like, you'd have your weird segment of medical things. And like, she's a nursing student.
Okay.
Really
yes, it
enjoys that.
It has not ended that because I do 100% sleep medicine now, and I'm I do basically I see kids and then our adults with usually major psychiatric issues, we'll say. These people do some interesting things at nighttime, either volitionally or involitionally. It's like, oh, that's you don't normally do that. That's dangerous. You know, so your wife reads you stories while you wear a diaper and on a pacifier? That's interesting. You might have a sleep problem.
I definitely need to go get one of those sleep things done. I think I always wake up insanely tired.
Yeah, you don't have to give me too many details. Are you like roughly my age, like late 30s, or are you younger?
No, I'm in my late 20s.
Late 20s, okay. Yeah, no, I mean, sleep apnea, that'd probably be the most common thing at that age.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm literally 39 years old, so I'm an old guy now. Yeah. But. So you're doing the right thing. You actually got to start with kids at the right age. Like, I was 35. We're like, we should have another kid. Like, oh, this is, wow, I don't know. This is terrible.
Well, the thing was, is like we were planning to have them later. And birth control failed the first time. I'm like, okay, whatever, you know, let's roll with this. And then the doctor prescribed her a different one. They said should be more effective. And it was like right afterwards when you could, start having intercourse again and went on this new one. It was supposed to work. And then, a few months later, she was like, man, I feel really weird. So we go to the doctor and it's like, oh, you're pregnant. I was like, hey, not that I'm not excited, but I thought,
Yeah, maybe you're just that virile. Maybe they weren't expecting that they needed a higher strength.
Right. So at this point, we're now just in separate rooms.
For me and my wife too, was like, infertility, very common problem. It's like, we did not have to wait. It's like, okay, that was, we thought we'd have a little bit of a buffer here, but no. Because you guys are probably similar. Like, I think ours are roughly about 16-ish months apart, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, roughly.
Yeah, ours are 13.
Yeah, so, yeah. You're the same boat where you're just like, you have like a 6 or 9 month old at home, and you're like, oh, we're going to bring home another kid. This is insanity. I don't know what we're doing.
Yeah, it was crazy. And then the first one, luckily, was really, really easy. She started sleeping through the night super early, like maybe at like 3 or 4 months.
Oh, nice.
And so we were like, oh, yeah, we can handle the second one. The first one's a breeze. And then we got, like, an actual baby.
Like, oh, no, this is what people meant.
Yeah, it has been rough. And then right now they're moving around and working together. And that's, like, that's a scary part, is that they're very synergistic. Like, I came into the kitchen, and one of the youngest one was on his knees and elbows while the oldest was on his back climbing to get to the counter.
Well done, yes. Yeah, where they can work in teams and like, oh, one be like, I can get a chair, and then we can get another chair to put on top of that chair, and then, yeah.
Yeah, no, they build things, and the childproof locks don't work anymore because they figured them out. Like, they'll climb up to get one thing out of the drawer, like a pen or a screwdriver, out of this door that they can fix that thing so they can get the screwdriver to undo the latch here so they can get into this thing. And
hey, you know,
our
you say you're impressed.
Are just kept in our closet.
and you're impressed and terrified at the same time. So I remember my mother-in-law's like, well, you know, kids are going to explore. Just make one cabinet their cabinet. You know, put, you know, the random turkey basters, whatever stuff you don't need in there, so they have one to play with. Like, oh, that sounds like a good idea. That's a logical idea. A toddler's not a logical being. So to them, that means every single cupboard in the house has fun stuff in it. So that was one of the dumbest things we never did. It was like, oh, man. It's like, why are you going through every single cabinet? Like, are you possessed? I don't quite understand what you're doing. And it's like, oh, grandma made a fun cabinet. Now I get it.
So we got a dog for Christmas, right? And they will put themselves in the kennel.
Okay, well, that's good parenting there.
They think it's the funnest thing. And, I'm trying to get them out. And the kennel is within view of the front door. So sometimes they will ring the door, and I'll open the door, and it's like the UPS guy, and I'm signing for something. And he can see over my shoulder, there's a kid in a kennel. I was like, no, look, let me have the kid just like to explore. Please don't call CPS.
You're like, no, they're just only during the day. Like, we let them out. Yeah, no, it's this is something I actually talked with somebody that may potentially join us in the future is Benny Smith. I think right? Yeah, I just kind of knew him from a long time ago, kind of early MTG, Monday Night Magic days. And yeah, he's also a guy I had contact about sort of doing sort of more of a parent / dad focused, because he's similar. I can't remember how many kids he has, but at least two, I think.
There is a podcast that I will turn you to. That's another Magic podcast that just has an MTG dad segment.
Really? Oh, okay.
It's called The Brothers War. They're commander focused, but they have like an MTG dad segment, and they just talk about, it's a random thing, where what's going on with their kids and things like that.
Well, that's it.
I know, more than willing to get on. They're out of Austin, I think. But,
oh, interesting. Okay, even kind of, I'll say at least somewhat your neck of the woods there.
Yeah, only a few hours away.
So I know Texas is a big state, so I was like, I don't actually know how close together or far apart those two cities are.
Yeah, you can drive, I think, up to 15 hours and still be in Texas.
Is it? I was like, I know it's an enormous state.
Because
in 9 hours, I can go from where I am to where my parents were from in North Dakota. And that's about 9 hours.
El Paso to Beaumont. Those are both on each one. That is 12 hours.
Nice.
But that's doing the narrow part of Texas.
Okay. I see El Paso. It's kind of way in the... I pulled up Google Maps, like the left tip there.
So like Brownsville or
Texarkana. This is a cool town name.
Yeah.
Texarkana. That's an actual city. There you go.
Oh, and that whole there's a Texacoma as well, which is on the border of Oklahoma and Texas.
That is fantastic. That's like a thing. I did not know that. I learned something today.
They are both towns that I would not venture in. They're like very, I think there are active KKK clans in both those towns.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's.
It's something that I try not to go in.
Yeah, we don't have much for that. We just have like the preppers. I know. I guess we have a lot of nudist colonies for some reason in Minnesota. You think it doesn't make sense being a colder weather climate, but there's actually it's unofficial, but there is a cult that's just a little north of where we live it's unofficial polygamy. You know, they're not obviously legally married,
okay,
but they live in like polygamous sort of family units.
Hmm.
So I went to school with a child from one of those.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. I know there's, yeah, like, there's this... there are a bunch of nudist beach and nudist colonies in the area. There's a lot of furries in Houston.
Okay, that's one I don't have much experience with. Now, is it like like specific characters, or is it like to me, I think baseball mascots.
Yeah, but they're their own like entity, right? Like they create like a character that they.
Oh, so it's not like based on like Cookie Monster. Like I am Fluffy B. McDougal, and I am the furry Fluffy B. McDougal.
And they identify that that's who they really are, and they, you know, live their life that way. Recently, there's a in the competitive fighting game scene, the guy who's won like the last three big national tournaments is a furry and is like one while wearing the suit.
Okay, I need to try to picture this. What fight? What is like? You said it was a.
Hold on, I'll find it for you. Is it for the Dragon Ball FighterZ one? I know he won.
Oh.
So I'm trying to find. Oh, his name is Sonic Fox, I think.
Sonic Fox.
Oh, wait, no, that's not him. That's a different one. Who wears that? This guy wears, like, a full, like...
Yeah, this guy's wearing, like, a crazy, like, hat thing going on.
Yeah. Gosh. It was in my... Oh, no. Okay, here we go. It is Sonic Fox, but he started off wearing that little hat, and then I just
he's full-on furry now.
Yeah. Wearing, like, the costume, then his little jersey goes over it.
That's something to see.
And there's a Twitch stream of him just, like, playing against the people. I think that's just, like, the best. his vision has to be limited in this thing.
And he's still winning. It's like he's literally giving himself a handicap, like, for his game, and he's still just beating the pants off people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there we go. It's each their own. Well, Dinesh, thank you for joining me. Oh, go ahead.
Okay. No, there was a... No, I don't know if you follow fighting games, but there was a Smash Brothers guy. His name was Mango. And then he, like, finally lost and, like, disappeared. But when the new game came out, he played, like, wearing a mask and nobody knew who this guy was. And he just, like, destroyed this tournament wearing a mask. And, like, at the end of it, you know, took his mask off and revealed that, you know, it's him coming back. But so apparently this has some precedent in the fighting community.
Oh, but that's almost like a pro wrestling type thing. Like, you're wearing the mask and you do the reveal. That's pretty good. I'm going to go pick up a kindergartner right now.
All right. Well, good talking to you.
Yeah, well, thanks. Well, again, obviously no pressure, but if you're ever open on Wednesdays, I will send you the link.
All righty.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, bye. How the hell do I end this thing?